Well, that brings us to a chapter called Mendel and the Gene Idea. Mendel is the name of a man, now dead. Does anyone recognize him in this group of monks? He was a monk. Is he famous enough for you to be able to spot him? Have you ever heard of Mendel? Gregor Mendel. Gregor was his first name. He's the one right here. And he didn't get any credit for the important stuff that he did during his lifetime. Even though he published a paper, it was pretty much ignored till after his death. But now, it's so important that he's known as the father of genetics. He was able to figure out a lot of how genetics works without having any idea what DNA is, without having any idea what a gene is. He still figured it all out, or figured a lot of it out. And therefore, in his honor, we call genes that operate, we call things that, we use the phrase Mendelian genetics in his honor. And that's what we're going to be largely studying in this chapter. He was a monk that lived in the 1800s in what is now Herzegovina, right? Anyway, he lived in Europe, Eastern Europe. And I think being a monk probably helped him because it gave him time to focus, be very, very careful as an experimental biologist. And in those days, experimental biology was not all that well developed. Biology in those days was mostly descriptive, meaning you go out into nature and you catalog things. You find things, you describe what it's like. It wasn't really so much an experimental science where you're testing things. And also in his day, there was not nearly enough appreciation for the importance and the power of statistics, which is really important in experimentation. It's the reason why you don't do something just once. You have to have many replicates in order to trust your results in an experiment. Well, this wasn't appreciated back in Mendel's day, but Mendel appreciated it. And that's why the results he got were so convincing. If he had done things just one or two times in each of the experiments, you would have no possible way of figuring it out. The reason he was able to figure stuff out, even though he had no idea what DNA is because he did things at least hundreds of times each, for each, sometimes thousands of times for each experiment. And it took many years to do this because he worked with pea plants. And just to get to the point of being able to start his experiments took years because he had to make sure that he was working with what are called true breeders. He had to know that the pea plants he was working with were exactly the type of peas that he wanted. So that was just, and you can't rush it, right? You have to wait for pea plants after you plant them to grow up and start producing peas of their own. That takes years of field work. He had separate fields with each one devoted to just one experiment at a time. So really, really careful experimenter, which is why he was so successful. In slide 2, we can see a basic rundown of how his experiments were conducted. Like I said, he used pea plants, and not all plants are like this, but pea plants are examples of flowering plants whose flowers, which the flowers of a flowering plant are the reproductive organs, whose flowers have both male and female parts on the same individual. The female parts are called carpels, and the male parts are called stamens. So the stamens produce the stamens produce the male gametes, and the carpels produce the female gametes. Pollen is what the male gametes are. All right, now, in nature, in a plant like this, it's basically up to chance as to who reproduces with what, which two individuals reproduce with each other. Right, they're plants. They don't meet each other. Their gametes have to meet in order for fertilization to occur, but the individuals don't. So it's up to how the wind blows or how the bees land on it or whatever. But in any case, for fertilization to be successful, the pollen, which carries the male gamete, has to be delivered to somehow the sticky end, called the stigma, of the carpel. That pollen will stick, and then it will start burrowing through the length of this carpel, making a tunnel as it goes, and when it will reach the part in here that it'll reach the ovary, where the eggs are made, and sperm will go through those tunnels and fertilize the eggs, and that will produce the zygotes just like it does in us. All right, well, Mendel didn't want to leave that to chance. He wanted to be in control of which parent was reproducing with which other parent. So he had to be very careful that he didn't let self-pollination to occur. In other words, the pollen from one flower sticking on the stamen of that same flower. All right? So he would have to go out and carefully clip off the male stamens from certain flowers, certain individuals. And then he would carefully go to other individuals that he chose as the male parent, and collecting with a brush, collect the pollen from those, and then go over to the ones he chose as the female parents and brush that pollen onto the carpels to control which male crosses with which female. And that itself is really a lot of work. He was doing a lot of work for years, but basically alone for all of this. But anyway, that's just the very beginning, of course. Then you have to wait for the fruit to be developed. The fruit includes the seeds. Each seed, each pea in a pod, is genetically different. These are siblings, right? So this is like, in this case, having quintuplets. Five different individuals. But anyway, you have to wait for those to be produced after you do the work of brushing the pollen on. Then you have to plant those. Then you have to wait the next year for them to grow into plants, hopefully. And then you have to look at the characteristics that those plants exhibit to get any results. And like I said, you can't even do that until you first know, from years of planting them season after season, what kind of characteristics your two parents that you've chosen have. All right, so a lot of work. But this is the basic technique. And so you have what are called the P generation, standing for parental. And then those produce offspring. The direct offspring of the P generation is called the F1 generation. F stands for filial, which means offspring. And as we'll see, we can produce the F2 offspring from that then, but that's not shown here. Now I want to make sure you understand the difference between two important terms, especially because they're not used outside of biology the same way they're used in biology. I'm sure you've heard the words characteristic and trait, right? Well, in everyday language, those kind of mean the same thing, trait and characteristic, wouldn't you say? But in genetics, they do not mean the same thing. A characteristic is something about an organism. A trait is a specific value of that characteristic. And that those definitions in words probably don't give you as good an idea as simply using it as an example. And a really easy to understand example would be hair color. Hair color is a characteristic. But you know from experience that not all individuals have the same hair color, right? There are different values for hair color. Brown, blonde, whatever. Each of those individual possibilities or values, like brown-haired, that is a trait of the characteristic hair color. You see the difference? Okay. Well, Mendel dealt with, I think, 7 different characteristics. 1 in each of his 7 experiments. He conducted each experiment the same way with respect to carefully crossing one parent with the other. But in each of his 7 experiments, he paid attention to only one characteristic. He didn't care about all the other characteristics in that batch. Each field, which was just one experiment, he looked at only one characteristic. Okay, that's the background for what he did. Let's then look at slide 3. This is one of his experiments. In this case, what is the characteristic that he's looking at here? Can you tell by this? Color of what? Yes, flower color is, in this experiment, the characteristic that you care about. So in an experiment, you don't try to look at multiple characteristics at once, right? You're trying to focus on one thing that you care about in that experiment. So flower color, even though each plant has many, many characteristics, you don't care about those other characteristics, like how tall the plant is or what the color of the peas are. In this, it's just flower color. That's the one characteristic that's being tracked. And a lot of Mendel's success can be attributed to the fact that he was so careful, but he also probably got lucky a little bit as well. And that's because in each of his experiments, where he paid attention to one characteristic in each of those, there were only 2 traits possible. And that's not always the case. Like human hair color, right? There's a lot more than just 2 possible hair colors. Well, the more possibilities there are, the more traits there are for a characteristic, the more confusing it would be to figure out the results. But in all 7 of Mendel's pea plant experiments, each one dealing with a different characteristic, there were only 2 traits possible for each characteristic. And so that simplified figuring out what the results meant. And that's true, therefore, for this one, which is where the characteristic is flower color. The only 2 possible traits are purple-flowered individuals and white-flowered individuals. Okay, now, in the pea generation, to create the pea generation, he first had to know that he was dealing with what are called true breeding individuals. Each of these 2 parents is true breeding, meaning that if you cross these purple-flowered ones he used together, they would produce only purple-flowered individuals. Same with the white. They would produce only white-flowered individuals. That's a true breeding individual. Once he knew he had that, then he could proceed with the experiment. And this experiment, this cross, is an example of what we call a monohybrid cross. Okay, that word monohybrid, both of those roots are important here. The hybrid part of it means that This cross is a cross between different parents, parents of different traits for the characteristic that's chosen. So you have one characteristic, in this case flower color, but the fact that it's a hybrid cross means that one parent has one of the possible traits and another parent has another possible trait. Purple in one and white in the other. All right. The fact that it's a monohybrid cross means that the mono, meaning one, means that all you care about is one characteristic. You just ignore anything else about the parents. All you care about is flower color. Okay, well, anyway, he did this. And then the next year, when he was finally able to, you know, this produced the peas, then he had to plant the peas and let those grow up into offspring plants that have their own flowers in order for him to look at those flowers. That's the F1 generation. Well, right away, this is kind of a surprising result, even though the experiment's not done. What he noticed is that the F1 generation was made up of only 100% purple-flowered individuals. And that's why it's kind of surprising, right? Because for thousands of years before Mendel, we have noticed that offspring are like a mixture of their parents, right? So you would kind of expect, based on that experience, a completely purple-flowered individual crossed with a completely white-flowered individual to produce an offspring that would be purplish-white. But that's not what happened at all. Not only were there no white ones in the F1 generation, only purple, but also those purple-flowered individuals in the F1 generation were fully purple. They were just as purple as the purple-flowered parent. Fully purple, in other words. And this is what Mendel was trying to figure out, why that's the case, without having any knowledge of what DNA or genes are. And so his curiosity didn't let him just stop there. He then used that same careful technique for another year, you know, and crossed an F1 with another F1. Okay? F1 crossed with another F1 produces seeds, which you then plant and let grow up the next year. And you look at the F2 generation. And in the F2 generation, he noticed that white-flowered individuals were in this F2. There weren't any in the F1, but there were some in the F2. And notice that he did this 1,000 times. These are real Mendel numbers. 705 of them were purple-flowered individuals, and 224 of them were white-flowered individuals. Well, that's very close to a 3-to-1 ratio, which is a famous Mendelian ratio for a monohybrid cross in the F2 generation. This is why it's so important to have replicates. If he had done this just once or twice, let's say he did it just once and just happened to get in white-flowered individuals, what would you conclude? Well, 100% of the time in the F2 you get white, which is wrong, right? You have to have big numbers to be able to know what the real statistics are. So he found that white reemerges, so to speak, because it was there in the P generation, it was hidden in the F1 generation, and then reemerged in the F2 generation. And this has to do with, I mean, this brings up the distinction between two types of traits. We call them recessive and dominant. The dominant trait is called that because you only need one dominant version of a gene in order for the trait to be the dominant trait. In this case, purple is dominant over white. Recessive gets its name because to recede, the verb form, means to hide. It seems like white is hiding for a generation and then comes back out. That's why it was called the recessive trait. Now, I'll give you better definitions of these when we have more information available. But we're going to be talking about dominant and recessive traits in a lot in this chapter. This is just the first example of a monohybrid cross that Mendel performed. The 3-to-1 ratio, though, three dominant to one recessive in the F2 generation of a monohybrid cross recurs in all seven of his experiments. And he wouldn't have noticed that if he hadn't used so many high numbers. Okay? So it's not 3-to-1 because it's flower color, in other words. It's 3-to-1 in all cases of genes that act in a Mendelian fashion. Well, I think in slide 4 we can see, yes, a table of all seven of his major experiments. Each row of the table is a different experiment conducted the same way but in a different field of peas. And in each field, in each experiment, he only cared about one characteristic, ignoring everything else about the plants. So flower color was one. In this one, flower position, where they were on the plant, in other words. Right? At the tip or somewhere else. Seed color, whether the peas were yellow or green, another experiment. Their texture, whether they're smooth or round, or smooth or wrinkled, and so on. These are its real numbers. You can see how many hundreds of times he did all of these things. But the point here is that the experiment was conducted exactly the same way. He looked at a different characteristic in each one. But in the F2 generation, when he did each one, he got that same 3-to-1 ratio. In the F1 generation, he saw no recessive traits. Right? But then in the F2 generation, produced out of two F1s crossed, he got that recessive trait again, but there were three times as many dominant traits as individual traits. And that's the power of his statistics. You're doing it hundreds of times, you can see that they're all basically the same, 3-to-1. I'll stop there because that's kind of a change in direction.